Yeah,
here's another reason why you want to take control of what you're doing.
Everything kind of funnels into the only winning move is not to play the game.
So I got to ask permission to buy the gun, and then I got to pay to ask permission to carry the motherfucker outside of my house. How about you go fuck yourself?
I always love that intro, man, but we got to get Jason in there, you know what I'm saying?
We'll get Jason in there soon, man. I just got to find a good clip and everything and then get him in.
Well, yeah, no, we got to do all that stuff.
I think Jason's anyway. Restarting his phone or something.
No, I just got another order.
Oh, shit. Yeah.
This is live and we're supposed to be like, doing a podcast and stuff. We can't be doing business, but nevertheless, we are doing business tonight because John Oderman's on and he's all about business and stuff, but just wanted to say hi. Hey, welcome to the Weathered Report. We do this every Sunday, 7 o'clock Pacific time, the right time. The Wed Report. There we go. He's got some swag there.
Left-hand path time.
And we do this
leftover time.
YouTube and Rumble. We're live on YouTube and Rumble. And then we drop the podcast on Monday morning at 6 a.m. Eastern time, just so you guys can have your coffee and have something to do when you go to work in the morning. And if you're not doing that, you should be tuning in to the Daily Weathered View, which is also on X at 6 a.m. Pacific time. So
it's almost like
New York can tune in at 3 o'clock and get our Sunday show at 6 a.m. But I'm really excited tonight. How you doing, guys? Oh, by the way, we are sponsored by Jason of Horrible Designs. He's down there in the corner. We got Harkos, who is the sponsor with Apex Music Systems and the Music Making Sense podcast. And then up there in the right hand corner, you got Ken from Mad Cave Studios. There he is. And I'm Bruce, the Weathered Soul. You can get me at weatheredsoul.com. And like I said, we are just excited tonight because we have one of the most famous guys of all time.
Hitler?
Not quite Hitler.
Oh, okay. All right. Kanye. Got it.
Kanye. Not quite Hitler, but not quite Kanye.
Okay.
But when we talk about liberty, man, there's nobody that I know better than to discuss liberty, I'm losing my mind here.
Dave Smith?
Alternative ways to get income and stuff like that, and just generally just a nice guy to talk to. And John Odermatt is one of those guys. If you've never heard of John Odermatt before, he's one of the podcasters at Lions of Liberty. He's one of the founders with Brian McWilliams and formerly Mark Clare. And you can get them at lionsofliberty.com. But I'm going to bring them on right now because we're going to get into an interview that's going to be fantastic, I hope, because he's always been here before. He's been on this podcast so many times. I can't even tell you the number, but I want to welcome John Odermatt back. How you doing, John?
Doing awesome, man. Great to be back. First time with the whole crew, so I'm excited.
Yeah, well, we're excited too because we've been melding and getting along together and you know, it's kind of been a fight every once in a while, you know. It's just like some like that, you know. But we're getting
not,
our feet.
Not a good it's not a good podcast without some fights between co-hosts. That's what
yeah, it's almost like Brady Bunch. But yeah, it's almost like the Brady Bunch. But I don't think we got that, you know, looking around thing yet going down. But
it's not fighting as much as just showing Bruce how wrong he is.
Yes, yeah, Bruce is always wrong. Bruce, you're wrong.
You're wrong.
But John, yeah, so you know, one of our mainstays here at the Weather Report.
Jason's making all the fucking money back there. Every time he mutes his fucking mic because he's getting all these orders for Horrible Designs. This is not even bullshit either. He unmutes it to talk, all of a sudden he gets another notification, he's got another order. Back to the Easy Bake Oven making history and everything.
Back to
my Easy Bake mug press making another.
This is just like the view, isn't it, John?
I got my like nice Horrible Designs weather report koozie right here.
Absolutely. We're with you.
I'm doing a little bit of Horrible Designs promotion tonight, so this is Horrible Designs promotion we got.
Is that the Pew Pew one, or did you get another one?
No. I'm willing to be unreasonable with
the. Oh,
with
you got that one. Okay. Didn't you get the Pew Pew Subway one as well too? Oh yeah.
There we go.
It's like a shotgun shell.
Exactly. Designed it all myself too.
It's fucking dope. It's a very horrible design.
It's very horrible.
And there's our first tangent for the evening. Welcome, John.
I feel right at home.
John, you're looking good. I see you haven't taken the mustache off yet. I know that you've been talking on your podcast about taking the mustache off. It just hasn't gone yet. So you're looking good. Gotcha.
Yeah, I don't know. It's one of those things. Like once you grow a mustache, it's such a huge commitment. And like I think a lot of people dabble, like think about growing a mustache, and maybe they'll shave the mustache in and then look in the mirror and then be like, I can't keep that, shave it off. But I kept it. And now that I've kept it, it's like I've committed for like 9 months. And it's like, well, now if I shave it off, I'm going to look weird. And so I don't know. It's
like I know exactly how that is, man. Like I have to have some facial hair or else I look weird. Like I already am 37 and look like I'm 25, but whenever I shave and I don't have anything on my face, then I look like 19. So it's just weird. But I've had facial hair for like 12 years or something like that.
I tried growing facial hair once.
Yeah.
I tried it, and you ever seen that episode where Beavis and Butthead glue the hair to their face? That's how I look when I try to grow facial hair. It's horrible.
I look at all of y'all with facial hair, and I'm just like, I'm like Mr. Bigglesworth, you know, the cat from. I'm like the most hairless person. It's even leaving my head now, so I don't know what the hell's going on. So
that's all right. Yeah, I think I like John. John was talking the other day. The reason why he's got his mustache is because he really can't do any facial hair. Elsa, I can't do this over here, but I can do the little goatee and the mustache. But I can't do anything on the sides, and it's just crazy, man. So when I try. And then it gets real itchy under here, and I can't do that either. It's just like one of those.
Oh, the neck beard stuff?
Oh, God.
Yeah, I hate that shit, man. I got to shave it like every couple of days.
Yeah, neck beards and man buns. I can't do it, dude.
You mean douche knots?
Okay, you can call them douche knots. Yeah.
You got to be careful. If you grow a serious neck beard, then the Libertarian Party, they're going to come after you. They're going to want you to chair a state party or something. And
that's right.
You'll be sucked right into it.
You almost have to have a man bun now to be a serious libertarian. So,
what is a lepo? No, seriously, what is a lepo?
You guys are like the male view. We mansplain everything, and but anyhow, well, John,
they were all dudes.
A lepo is a baby leopard. Just to put that to bed. It's a baby leopard.
There we go. Just put that to
bed. I actually liked him until. A little bit before that, like I like Gary Johnson. I voted for him in 2012. And then like once he did like Bill Weld and started saying they're socially liberal, fiscally conservative. And then like the what is Aleppo thing? I mean, they kind of got him on that one. It's funny. But, you know, at the same time, I mean, Joe and Mika and them just fucking firing three different fucking questions at him at the same time. There's that. But yeah, I don't know what happened, man. It's like he just like his brain just popped and he just. I don't really know, but like I said, back in 2012, he was awesome.
Yeah, when he started talking, that's when he lost me. I'm like, hey, libertarian guy, I should vote for him. And he started talking. I'm like, oh yeah.
John has been to a lot of libertarian functions. In fact, one of our guests that we've had that he mentioned to me was Shane Hazel, and he met Shane Hazel at the Pennsylvania convention. Is that correct?
Yeah. No, that was like during the. It was during the COVID lockdowns. It had to be like late 2020 or early 2021 when people were still like afraid. And this was back when we thought Dave Smith was going to run for president. So
he's still running, right?
What's that?
Isn't he still running though, Dave Smith? He's running, but he hasn't announced it yet, right?
Not running, sure.
He's just running for chief libertarian comic. I think that's what he's running for. doing pretty well at it. I think he has that capitalized. But it was a Mises Caucus event in Pittsburgh, and Dave Smith was headlining it. And Shane lives in Georgia, which, you know, I'm not that good at geography, but it's pretty far from Pennsylvania. So I wasn't expecting to see him there. And I looked over and I see a bald-headed guy. I'm like, that looks a lot like Shane Hazel. That can't be Shane Hazel. But it was him. So I got to meet Shane in person. So that was really cool. But that event was interesting. Because that was the first time I'd been at a Libertarian Party event. And I used to be a lot more involved in the Libertarian Party. I helped manage a campaign for a Pennsylvania Senate candidate in 2018, but I've kind of backed away. But during this time, I was kind of still on that cusp, like, you know, things could really, you know, turn here. And that room, like, it was, wasn't a huge room, but it was, you know, packed. People were standing along the walls, and, you know, Dave Smith is giving his speech. And it's the first time I've had like a moment where I'm like, this could actually turn into like a Ron Paul 2.0 type thing. But that's fizzled out. I don't think that's going to happen.
How did Lions Liberty come about? How did you get involved with? I know that the Lions of Liberty. I know the story behind it. But mm-hmm. if you can give us a brief synopsis of how the Lions of Liberty came about and how you got into the Liberty movement and freedom and you know all the stuff that I cherish myself. These other communists over here, I'm not sure how they feel about it. But
yeah, we're communists. You live in California. That's correct. Yeah.
Yeah, well, funny part to that story. Two of my, you know, original Lions of Liberty co-founders were in communist California, so I guess Liberty can survive in yes, in that yeah. state. But it actually started, like, if we go way back to the origin, Brian, Mark, and I, and one of the other original founders who disappeared from the face of the earth as soon as we started podcasting, Dom Sidoti. We all went to Penn State together, and we were in the same fraternity. So you hear fraternity, you might think, like, what kind of weird shit are these guys into? But we were one of those fraternities that didn't really take ourselves, like, that seriously. You know, we kind of just drank beer and hung out, you know, didn't do any weird ritual things. But that's where I met them, and Brian and Mark are, like, 3-4 years older than me. So I was a freshman when they were seniors, and we just got along and stayed in touch. And they moved out to California when they graduated, or a couple years after. And I ended up out there as well, like 2 years after I graduated college. And we just started hanging out, and I was at a dive bar hanging out with Mark. When this had to be early 2007. So right when like Ron Paul was starting to launch that campaign way back then. And I assumed, like, Mark and I never really talked politics that much prior to this. I just assumed that he was a raging liberal because he had long hair and he lived in California. So I'm like, he must be a raging liberal. But, and I was raised a, you know, neoconservative, and I voted for George W. Bush, and
so that's why the mustache.
I heard you guys, you know, talking about if Hitler was coming on the show before, but it's the wrong mustache.
It's close,
but yeah. So I, you know, think of this guy as a huge hippie, and he starts, you know, talking about this Ron Paul guy, congressman from Texas, running for president, and you know, he's saying, you know, he's, you know. He's talking about the Federal Reserve and how he's anti-war. And I'm trying to like put all these like thoughts together in my head that I've never heard like mushed together for a Republican. So I'm like, what is this? Like, what is this guy? A Republican who's like anti-war, who's against the Iraq war. I must hate him because if he's against that war, then he can't be good. But he's talking about the Federal Reserve, and he's talking about how our money's been devalued. And I've always been like very much into economics. And I, you know, I was, when that fuse was lit in my brain about really the, you know, learning about the Federal Reserve and reading that book, oh God, what's it called, by G. Edward Griffin, Creature of Jekyll Island. Mm. Once I read that, which is a huge, massive book, but I highly recommend it for anyone out there interested in learning the origins of the Federal Reserve. Once I read that, there was no turning back. And essentially what happened is, you know, Ron Paul runs for president, loses in 2008, obviously. So we had like a big group of people who were talking on an email chain about this Ron Paul campaign. And we're talking about, you know, the ideas of liberty, and we're kind of learning. We're talking about the books you're reading, you know, sharing different articles, all that stuff that you do on, I guess that you used to do on email chains. I don't know if people still do that on email chains. Probably not. Most of my email just gets either straight to the recycle bin, or I just don't open it.
We have a big long text chain.
Yeah, ours is on text though. It's not on email. Like, I don't think I've ever had an email chain before. I've done chat rooms and of course there's social media shit and text message and stuff, but
yeah, it's like a generational thing probably. You're like a couple years younger than me, so I think I was like the tail end of it. So that was a little bit of the boomer in me, I guess, the email chain. But we started that, and all of a sudden we were like, why don't we like start one of those blogs that people have? you know, people have blogs where they like, because we were writing like freaking paragraph emails back to each other about these different things, different policies. And once we got to when Ron Paul was running again in 2012, we're like, let's start a blog. Let's really, you know, see if we can, you know, get other people to vote for Ron Paul, because we realized that our family, our friends, they don't want to listen to us talk about Ron Paul. They were like, you're insane. What are you talking about? So we had to find some people that would actually listen, I guess. And so we started the blog, started writing. You know, I look back at like some of the articles I wrote. I'm like, who was this person that wrote this? Like, because I mean, stuff we wrote was actually pretty good. And I really don't write anymore, so it's hard for me to string like that many paragraphs together. But what ended up happening is we grew a pretty large following just on this blog. And there was a website, a forum back then called the Daily Paul, where, you know, people would just post articles they wrote, articles they found, share it there. This is before podcasts, so no podcasts were really shared there yet. And we were getting all kinds of views, but we couldn't monetize. You know, people were like looking at our stuff, but it was like hard to monetize a blog back then. And then Mark interviewed Stephen Kinsella. If you know who Stephen Kinsella is, mm-hmm. he's a libertarian who is, his big thing is intellectual property. And Kinsella's like, let's release it as a podcast. Let's record our conversation and release it as a podcast. Mark's like, released as a podcast? What the heck is that? So they had a conversation. Mark released as a podcast and just kind of went on from there. Mark like took the leads with the podcast, and Brian and I kept writing. And we soon found, like, this was early, early podcast. And this is like 2014, I guess, I want to say. It was right around the same time that Tom Woods started his podcast. But mm-hmm. It was so much easier to grow a podcast back then, like getting up to like 5,000, 10,000 downloads per episode. And we're looking at our blog, like 2,000, 3,000 page views. We're like, why don't we do more of that podcasting and less of this writing? So that's kind of how the podcast started from there. And, you know, we can talk about how I got into, you know, talking about the criminal justice system and Felony Friday, but that's really the origin story. Just sort of happened by accident.
You know, I used to run the Tea Party group in Minnesota when I was a pretty heavy duty activist in the GOP in Minnesota. They're one, believe it or not. And we would use one of the things I was driving all these, most of the people in the audience were 60 to 80 year old school Republicans that don't know what a podcast is. So I was driving them to the Lions of Liberty podcast and driving them to Jason Stapleton, Tom Woods, because Jason Stapleton had a pretty good libertarian podcast. Because I was trying to take, there was a group of us that were trying to do, there were a bunch of the old Ron Paul people. I missed the Ron Paul movement because mm-hmm. I came in about 2009, but a lot of the Ron Paul people that stayed in the GOP, we were trying to take over the Minnesota State Party, you know, from the inside. And we almost did, but we didn't. We missed. But one of the things what we do is we would use, because you guys' shows, Felony Friday especially was a good one, to show people that had been in some trouble earlier in their life, and then later in their life they're still paying for some stupid thing they do when they were 21. Mm-hmm. And it was great because we'd get feedback. These guys would come, and then they come back to the meeting months later and be like, hey, you know, I started listening to those guys. Hey, did you hear the one Mark Clear's new show? Or did you hear the, you know, it was so it was really helpful to have you guys out there doing this and saying things that no one else was saying at the time, because we could direct people that way. Here's a link. We'd send them the email link to you guys' podcast and stuff like that. So it was from a listener side of view and an activist side of view. Those were all very helpful. They still are. I'm not as much of an activist anymore. Now I'm just more of a capitalist. So
that's a smart move, probably.
It turns out I'm doing better when I focused on my work instead of, you know, what John McCain was going to do.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about the two podcasts. Let's talk about the first one, which Felony Fridays that actually morphed into Finding Freedom. Just quickly take us through, you know, what was going on with that at that time. You guys were doing, I'm not sure. I came in. I came into Lions of Liberty by listening to Chris Spangle is actually how I kind of got turned on to you guys.
Oh, I remember
before
that
I started following you and actually stalking you, John. And you started with Felony Fridays and it's morphed into Finding Freedom. Tell us a little bit about those two and how they morphed.
Yeah. Felony Friday, it was another one of those things just kind of got its own legs and started running. Mark had been doing his show for a while and I had, a pretty regular segment where I would come on like twice a month or whatever and just talk about crazy stories from the criminal justice system, people who'd, were sent to prison for, 10 or, 20 years for a drug crime or whatever. And we kind of just realized, like I was saying before, let's kind of create more content. Let's make it its own show. So I started Felony Friday, partially because, I was passionate about the criminal justice system because I saw it like impact someone close to me. I'm not going to use the name of relationship just to keep privacy, but someone close to my wife and I who was not even really selling marijuana in college, rather was just, it would just help a friend, help friends connect with it if they wanted to buy it. This is years ago, back when, marijuana was obviously much more criminalized. But he got in a situation where an undercover cop was buying off of him and, kept coming back until he got the right quantity to be able to charge with a felony. And they did their raid and everything and arrested him, arrested his friends. And he ended up going to jail and, spending time in a halfway house. And I got to see, like, really from the inside that, this is a guy that he's in college. You could call it a mistake. I mean, obviously it shouldn't be illegal, but still it's illegal. So it's a mistake that you put yourself in a situation with that risk to get caught. I can definitely agree with that. But to have that on your record, a felony doesn't come off your record. You can't own a gun anymore. And just totally changes your life. So without him having the support of his family, family friends who helped him get a job when he first got out, I just saw that how quickly things can change just from something that it just doesn't even make any sense that something like that should potentially ruin someone's life. And yeah. I just started interviewing people. And the way that I found people, the criminal justice community is kind of crazy. It's very well connected. So like once I interviewed three or four people, it just became like a network where people just started referring their stories to me where, I have a friend who, they went through this and I just, would start getting emails with all these stories and I would, do my vetting and look into them and, look up what the crime was and, try to make sure I'm not bringing someone on my show who was lying or something like that. And I think I did a pretty good job of that, but I mean, the stories were just insane. And you start to understand that some of these people who end up doing like 20, 30 years in prison were arrested. There weren't even any drugs that were found when they were arrested. It's called ghost dope. So someone testified saying that this individual sold this much, or maybe just a package had been delivered to that address. They don't know what's in the package, but they're going to use the weight of that package and assume that all of that package was this dope, and then we're going to use that to charge him with a crime. It's just, it's totally crazy.
With no evidence whatsoever, no physical evidence?
Yeah. Well, oh, yeah.
Absolutely. How the fuck is that legal?
That's our criminal justice system, man.
Yeah, that's criminal.
Yeah, like,
that's why they call it the criminal justice system. They're giving
criminals try to put justice on to other people. Yeah, that doesn't make any sense. I understand getting caught with it. Like, I used to sell some stuff back in the day, right? And I understand if you get caught with it, okay, technically it's a crime, even though it was all voluntary. You're not harming anybody, blah, blah, blah. Besides the libertarian issue of it, right? It's technically a crime. You get caught with it, you get caught doing whatever, okay, done deal. But the getting caught with nothing, getting caught just because somebody said that you did something, I mean, that's worse than the no-knock raids.
Mm-hmm.
That's ridiculous.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. It, I mean, and the impact it has, of course, it's impacting the individual who's going to prison, but you got the impact of the family, you know, kids growing up without a dad. You know, it's terrible. And, you know, things have gotten a little bit better in the criminal justice system with the First Step Act, which helped, you know, has helped to a degree with sentencing. Obama was actually decent towards the end of his term with pardons and granting clemency. And actually a lot of my guests, I got a wave of guests that came through that were granted clemency during the tail end of Obama's years. And Trump was actually pretty good with Jared Kushner pushing for criminal justice reform along with, is it Ivanka or Ivana? I always get it confused. Which one's his daughter?
Ivanka.
Ivanka.
But, Ivanka?
Yeah,
Ivanka. Yeah, but, the hot one.
Yeah, but Kanye, Kanye and Kim Kardashian were in there a lot doing the criminal
justice. Yeah, Kim Kardashian
stuff.
Too. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, Kim Kardashian was really influential in getting Alice Johnson a pardon. Right. And yeah, she's Alice Johnson has stepped up and she's been very instrumental in, you know, helping others as well, but you know, it's I felt like it's not like I felt like I made a difference, but I felt like, you know, when I talk about transitioning from Felony Friday to finding freedom, obviously there's still people who are locked up, and I still do, you know, I still do have on guests who are, you know, have these stories to share from their, you know, their time incarcerated, and I'll probably always continue to do that. But when COVID hit, I should say when the lockdowns hit, I'm trying to stop saying like the pandemic or COVID and just start saying lockdowns, because that's really what the injustice was for everyone. It was happening, you know, right in front of our faces. You know, we're seeing that businesses are forced to go out of business. You're seeing people that have worked their whole lives, you know, with a business, a restaurant or a bar or whatever it is, just having that taken away from them. And I'm just like, I can't like not talk about this. Like, I'm talking about people who are screwed, you know, for drug crimes and things like that. But I got to start talking about things that are happening right now during this time, this historic time when this, you know, as libertarians, we always talk to, you know, philosophically about what if the government does this? You know, what if the state does this? Well, they're doing it right in front of our faces and no one's doing anything to stop it. So I kind of felt like I had to pivot, and I wanted to share about, you know, not only those stories of people, you know, losing their businesses, but also people overcoming it, people who, you know, pivoted during that time. You know, I interviewed, it's actually a repeat interview, a guy named Cos Marte, who owns a exercise studio named Conbody. So right. With a name like Conbody, you can put it together. He came up with his exercise routine while he was in prison. And when he got out, he started working out in the park. Things just kind of one thing led to another. A boot camp started in the park, ended up getting his own space, started this exercise studio. And then when COVID hit, I've always followed him online about what he's doing because he's just a brilliant entrepreneur. And when COVID hit, he was like the first person to go to like video Zoom exercise classes like overnight, like just pivoted immediately. I'm like, it's just amazing to see someone pivot that quickly. So he was one of the like the first interviews that I had back on because I wanted to share that story. And then, you know, I'm an entrepreneur on the side. You know, I do work, you know, a full-time job, but I've always, I have a passion for, you know, entrepreneurship, people that, you know, people that hustle, people that want to have, you know, make side income, you know, multiple streams of income. So I wanted to start sharing more stories like that. And that's really what drove the full pivot to finding freedom and focusing on entrepreneurship, focusing on health, focusing on faith as well, and just all the different ways that as individuals we can make changes in our lives without, you know, without trying to, you know, change who we vote for or get behind a candidate, what we can do in our own lives to try to help ourselves and expand our freedom.
Absolutely. So this last podcast that you had, which was with Dan Wise, really hit me because he's got everything that I want. I mean, that when I first started talking to you and Jason Stapleton about what I wanted to do, it was really about making podcasts and getting a studio, actually having a media company. And it's kind of coming true, you know, with these guys that I've got here. These guys are helping me out immensely. But the Dan Wise story that you had, because he was back in 2017, he was on your Felony Fridays. And then mm-hmm. on your last podcast, Finding Freedom, he was on there. And he had come a long way since that time. Can you share that story just a little bit with us? And go ahead. Yeah.
When Dan was on, I think he just gotten out pretty recently. He was arrested for running for hip. He wasn't the one running it. There was a doctor writing the scripts, but he was helping to facilitate it. Essentially, running a pill mill. You know, helping people get prescription drugs illegally. And you know, he admits in hindsight, he shouldn't have been doing that. It was wrong. He was in the wrong. But when he was going into prison, like, he wasn't taking it seriously. Like, he shared a picture with me back in 2017 before he came on, that he actually dressed up in one of those like obnoxious Halloween prison outfits with like the stripes on it as he was going into prison, and just got a rude awakening once he got in there. But like so many people that I did have on like on Felony Friday, really, you know, it's a lot of people go into prison and, you know, they get caught up in the wrong thing. They join a gang. Things can definitely go wrong. So this isn't to say that like everyone who goes into prison comes out as a better person, but there are some people who do. And I'm not exactly sure why, but you know, Dan definitely was one of those guys. And he understood that there was a big, you know, black spot, big blind spot that he didn't see going into prison. So when he got out, he made it his mission to take that blind spot away for other people. So he became what's called a prison consultant, where essentially people who are going to prison, you know, they've been convicted, and you essentially help them to make that, you know, transition into prison as easy as possible. Like from everything from, you know, making sure that, you know, you kind of help them with, you know, talking to their family and their kids about, you know, what to expect. And also if there's any programs they can get lined up to get into, like an RDAP program, a drug program that can maybe reduce their sentence, do things like that. Help with influencing the writing of the sentencing report, which can really influence how much time you spend in prison and how early you can get out. And he started that business, started a YouTube channel. And actually, Dan was instrumental in why I started first doing video. And pushing Mark and Brian at the time to do video, because we were all like back in the early podcasting days, like there was no video. It was just a podcast. Yeah. Like it was just audio. That's all it was. Like no video was released anywhere. Yeah. And Dan had this YouTube channel and he didn't have a podcast. So we were like on opposite sides. I'm like, Dan, you need to start publishing this audio, getting it out there. Cause he was reaching people in the, you know, for his business, in order to grow his prison consulting business through his YouTube channel. And he was like, oh, I don't know, all the audio stuff kind of scares me. And I'm like, well, the video stuff, I don't know what I'm doing there. So we just kind of helped each other out to set that up. So he was a huge help to me with just getting basic video set up, with lights to buy and the camera and stuff like that. But what Dan's doing now, he's in Yakima, Washington, which is a tiny little town. I've never been to it, but I have heard of it. And he has a podcast studio there where he has some other investors, but he's put up a lot of his own money. And the idea is, of course, he hosts his own podcast from there, but also it's a studio you can rent out. And he does some things where he'll invite in different businesses. He's like different business spotlights, you know, where they can come in and, you know, and have some time on a show. There's like a business review show that they do where they, you know, rate businesses, and, you know, if someone had a bad experience somewhere, you know, that can come up on the show. So he has gotten some, unkind follow-ups from business owners from some of those podcast releases. But it's just a really cool idea. And something I've thought about too, Bruce, is starting a podcast studio like this. There is a lot of overhead going in, but he brought up a really good point. Like when it comes to monetizing it, it's a lot different than monetizing a podcast like Lines of Liberty. Like Lines of Liberty, we're not talking about, I live in Pennsylvania, outside of Pittsburgh. We're not talking about Pittsburgh. You know, I'm talking about everywhere. But if you have a podcast where you're just focused on one area, you're just focused on Yakima, Washington, and you're talking about what's going on there, what the community is like, you're bringing on different community members, it's a lot easier to reach out to get a, you know, $10,000, $5,000 sponsorship from like a restaurant than it is to do that when you have a, you know, a podcast that is just so general and so broad. So he's been able to, you know, almost get up to the point where he's making money, because it is a huge financial commitment, obviously, to rent this or to, yeah, to lease out this podcasting space, to buy all the, you know, cameras and recording equipment and things like that. But he's doing some cool stuff. So, and another cool thing he's doing, Bruce, which I think we talked about this before, is going around to, like he'll go around to local farmers markets. And I was telling Bruce he should do this out in California for the weather report, and just do on the spot interviews from the different people in this farmers market. And what Dan is doing is he'll cut up like, he'll get permission, you know, permission from the people who organize the market first, of course, to go around, get these interviews, and then just make a quick advertisement for free and say, do you guys want this? You guys want to use it? Just give it to them. And then, you know, that goodwill, that reciprocity has come back for him.
Yeah, that was one of the things that hit me most about that podcast, was this pay it forward kind of mentality with doing that. And after I listened to that, you know, I've been doing some stuff on TikTok and Facebook where I'm doing my walk during my lunch hour. And, you know, I'm really heavy into walking. I mean, me and you did, we just got off of an 18 day challenge, in the business that me and you share. And, it hit me as something, as an old guy, as the old guy, the elder statesman here at the, Weather Report, old man Winters, the oldest. I recently just started walking golf courses and things like that. And it was something that I wanted to do, but I really went in unprepared in January. And I went and walked this golf course. It was about 7,000 yards, but it was up and down. It was in the foothills. So it was up and down, pushing my cart, and also swinging, you know, up to 126 times that day. And it was, by the time I was done with that round, I was gassed. So, you know, I had started walking probably about 10 days before we got into that 18 day challenge. And I haven't looked back. And I think it's really important that, one of those things that happened, you know, kind of what I was going on, is that it's just really important for those things to happen. And when I'm going through my motions, going walking now, I pass the same people every day. So I just went and thought, hey, what a great idea to interview these people that I walk past every day. Not all of them will do it. Some people will think I'm a freak, but most of them see me, you know, on my walk every day at lunchtime. So maybe they will. So I'm looking forward to doing that and trying to get some interviews back and forth and getting the input of people on why they're doing it. Why they're doing it this time? When is their best time to exercise? Because mine is during my lunchtime, because that's really the only time I have. I got an hour to work. I've got, you know, 8 to 9 hours at work and then an hour home. That's, you know, 12, 13 hours. You know, so, you know, parsing, you know, my work here at the Weathered Soul and keeping up with these guys and just making sure that my family's good, my garden's going, I'm feeding everybody. You know, so it's really, really taxing. So it's really important to do that. But back to the interviewing thing. Yeah, I thought that was really, really a good thing.
Yeah,
to do.
And like with those interviews, if you look at, and I'm not on TikTok. I used to be. I need to get back on it. I was kind of protesting it for a while, but I've kind of realized I can't do that anymore. But China. Instagram Reels is kind of similar, and. If you look at like a lot of the content that's doing so well with Reels right now, it's just these like little short interviews. Like there's a guy that all he does is he interviews people, you know, who've made like $1 million or more or whatever. He asks them how they did it. And, you know, what's the most money you've made in a year? It's like 45 seconds. and these videos are getting millions of views. So I think there is definitely an appetite for content like that. There's also just crazy, stupid content of, you know, guys interviewing girls outside of bars, but that's, you know, that's serving like a different demographic with those ones.
But that's not my demographic at all, but that's where we're going. So going forward with your entrepreneurial exploits, I mean, you really lean heavily on the, on that and finding freedom. And, I know me and you share business, together. We'll probably be talking like that, you know, at the end of the show and into the bonus content. But as far as all your entrepreneurial stuff that you're going, how many side businesses do you actually have? And why is it so important for us to look for alternative ways to produce income?
Yeah, I think, you know, when it comes to income, I'll say this. So when it comes to investing, you would never invest all of your money, or I would say it wouldn't be wise to invest all your money in just one asset or just one company. If something happens with that company, if something happens with that asset, you're totally screwed. Of course, you know, I did listen to your interview with Shane Hazel, and I've interviewed Shane, and there's a lot of, you know, Bitcoin maximalists that would say put all your money in Bitcoin. I'm not there. I don't think I'll ever be there with that, just because I can't get there. But I think income's the same way, and I think more people are waking up to this for a couple different reasons. But putting all your eggs, if you just have a job, putting all your eggs in the basket with that company, it's kind of a totally absurd when you think about it, because that company, they can get rid of you at any time. The company I work for, I'm not going to say the name, but a lot of companies have done this recently. There's just been a lot of layoffs in the past 3-4 months, you know, lay off, you know, 20-30% of the workforce. Happens like that. Yep. No one sees it coming. I've been laid off before when I lived in California. That's why I moved back to Pittsburgh. I was laid off from my job. Happens all the time. And people don't plan for it. Sure, you have some savings, but savings will get you by for, you know, a couple months if you're saving well, which most people aren't saving well right now. You're probably, mm-hmm. They only get a couple weeks with the current savings rate when you look at that across generations, especially millennials and Generation Z really aren't saving at all just because of inflation. But I think a couple different reasons why I think more people are looking for alternative sources of income. I think they're waking up, number one, to this fact that we need to diversify our income. Also, it's never really been easier to create income streams, be it through podcasting, content creation, different things like that. Plus, it's so easy to learn a new skill now. Maybe not easy, but easy to find. Easy to find the videos and the lessons in order to learn a new skill. Like one thing that I do on the side, which I haven't been super active with it lately, but this goes back to, I don't know, maybe 2015, I think, when I started. I was listening to a podcast, and a guy was talking about buying vacant land and flipping it. So buying vacant land at a really low price, like 30% on the market, and then flipping it around at the market price, selling it on seller finance terms. And I'm like, this sounds crazy. Like, is this actually something people can do? Because essentially all you're doing is shuffling paper around and making money. And I ended up buying a course off this guy for, I think at the time it was like maybe $300, $400. And the course didn't take you through everything you needed to do, because legally he would have exposed himself in some areas if he did that. But he gave you just enough information that you could fill in the gaps and figure it out. So I did. And, you know, for years I was doing it more often than I am now. And I do plan on getting back into it more heavily, but where essentially what I would do is you find a county that, you know, ideally you want to find an area that is growing, you know, that has, you know, it's close to either a city that's growing or something like that. You don't want to, you know, you don't want to buy in a dead area that has no potential for growth. And you also want to find a county that has a lower price for real estate. You're not going to go into, you know, freaking the Atlanta area in Georgia and start trying to buy vacant land. So you want to be out more in the more rural areas. But what you do is you go to the county treasurer. You get a list of delinquent taxpayers. You figure out, you know, how much are you willing to pay for the properties. You set your budget, and you just mail, you know, thousands of delinquent taxpayers, and you just lowball them. And you might think, like, this is crazy. No one's gonna accept like a lowball offer, 30% on land that they own. The thing is, there's a lot of people out there who bought land 20 years ago, haven't done anything with it. There's people who inherited land and it's a burden because they got to pay the taxes on it every year and they don't want it. And they're too lazy to go market it and try to sell it. So if someone owns a piece of land that's maybe it's worth $10,000, but they get a letter in the mail that says, I'll give you $3,000. All you got to do, sign this sales agreement. We'll close on it. You'll sign the deed over to me and you'll have $3,000, you know, in a week. We can do this quickly. There's people who want to do that. And then you buy it and you flip it around and you can sell it on terms if you can, because then you can maximize your return. But I've done that quite a bit, and that's been a good side hustle for sure. I kind of went on a tangent there, but
no, that's cool. Because we're all entrepreneurs here. I mean, you know, Jason being the one who's doing business as we speak right now with Horrible Designs, and he is having a boon this weekend. He raises prices and he can't keep items on the shelf. So, and then we got Ken, who he's got a art studio that he runs, and Harkos is a music producer and also a marketing person on that side of the aisle. And I'm still dragging my feet trying to get my homesteading and gardening type thing started up. But I mean, we're all entrepreneurs on the same level and trying to get these incomes started. And it's really, in my view, it's important. And even though, you know, me and you are in business together, we both make money off of the same products that we sell. And that comes in very handy for a lot of things. I mean, you know, basically, if you can cover the cost of something that either you enjoy doing, or maybe it's a bill, or maybe it's your mortgage, or maybe it's, you know, whatever it is, if you can cover that cost and something that you're doing on the side other than your 9-to-5, you're ahead already. So, I mean, I think that's one of the biggest attractions of it. The one thing that I've always found that was most difficult was the discipline to sit down and do it. And basically in this last year, I finally had gotten those things in front of me and front and center and going like, this is the discipline that you have to have. This is the way that you have to parse your time out. You know, you have to eat lunch at your desk so you can go take your walk during lunchtime. You have to spend, you know, this time with your family after you get home from work. So at 8 o'clock or 9 o'clock, you go into your studio and you do your work. You cut out Saturday mornings for that little, you know, my biggest thing is Saturday mornings. That's my most productive time. That's when I do almost all my writing and all my production stuff for this podcast and other things that I'm doing for content out in my homestead. So all those things
you have to systemize it, right?
Go ahead. What?
You have to systemize it.
You have to systemize it. Yeah. And that's a huge discipline to grasp when you're first starting this, because everybody can have these delusions of grandeur. This is what they want to do. And they pile so much stuff onto themselves, all this responsibility and all these things that they got thinking about through their head. All of a sudden they're going like, this is too overwhelming. I just don't want to do it anymore. And I think that's one of the things that, we as entrepreneurs and what we try to do on this show, and I think what you try to do, is to parse out that situation between our listeners and our followers to be able to help them kind of systemize their stuff and going forward.
You know, John, when we were talking about the Felony Friday and the Freedom Show that you have now, it sparked a memory. There was a gentleman that used to come to our tea party, actually, and this was starting in 2013, 2014. His name is James Whitfield. I was looking it up when you guys were discussing. And he was a felon. He did, I believe it was an armed robbery. And when he was 17 or 18, did 18 years, turned his life around in prison, got a degree in accounting, figured he'd be able to get out and get a job, and realized very quickly that no one's going to hire a felon.
For accounting?
As an accountant. So he came out and he had nothing. Yeah. He had nothing. And he ended up falling into a local cable news place, like a local, a city cable network, the small town cable show, and helping them work the camera. And they just needed somebody. So they trained them. And he had the idea of, you know what? There's something. There's a business here of I can go, because other guys are going to have the same problem coming out. The recidivism rate's ridiculous. Mm-hmm. And so he'd go back into prison and find people that were just getting ready to come out, teach them what they needed to know. So when they get out, they could work at some local cable company, because cable companies didn't care. They'd hire you. They just need somebody to, you know, help build the set or move some stuff around, you know. And he built it. It was called the Ex Offenders Resource Network. He started it. And we helped him at the Tea Party get that thing going and turned him on to a bunch of people at the State House, who then helped him quite a bit. And then he founded the Our Turn Social Media Network, which is a social media network for felons coming out of prison to help support each other. And I'll see if I can put you in touch with him, because I think he'd be a great guy. Guy was just a super guy too. And he's a car guy, so I like him. You know, we talk Cadillac a lot.
Of course you talk to car people about car stuff.
Well, yeah.
Who would have imagined that the guy who draws and paints cars basically for a living.
The good people are car guys. Car guys are good people.
Yeah. Ken is like the Rain Man of car guys. Of cars.
That's true. Yeah, Jason went to a show with me one time. It was pretty funny.
Yeah. I went to a show and he's like rattling all the stuff. I'm like, how in the hell do you know all this shit?
So, John, expanding on what I just said about the discipline to do things, did you have that discipline when you first went into it? Being along with the Lions of Liberty, a family man, you got married, you have kids, and just that whole dynamic, you know, it's really, really, I think, like I said, I think it's the most important thing when you're starting out as an entrepreneur is that you have to secure the discipline to go forward and do that. And how do you do that?
Yeah, I think a big part of it is self-awareness and understanding how you operate. And I know that I need to have like deadlines for myself. If I don't, then it won't get done. I mean, and a lot of times the deadline, like I'm right up against it. That's just how I operate. But I have to put those barriers in, not barriers, those like milestones, I guess, in place to get stuff done. But Lions of Liberty has been a huge help to me just at, you know, seeing what creating a system can do over a long period of time, where, you know, Brian and Mark and I, once we all had podcasts, we just, you know, we made commitments to each other that we were going to have a show on that day every week, no matter what. And we never missed. I've never had it used to be on Fridays. Now it's on Mondays. I've never had a day when my show is supposed to publish where it doesn't publish. And there's only been like one or two times that I had to publish in, you know, an older episode to fill the slot. But I think creating or having a system like that, where you see what discipline over time can do, that builds belief in, you know, in yourself, in other aspects of life for sure. And I think a lot of people, especially with podcasting, you have to be careful that you don't overcommit and commit to something that is going to be hard to maintain over a very long duration. I forget who told me this years ago, but whatever you deliver, whatever your audience gets used to you delivering, you got to be able to continue to deliver that. So if you set this bar super high and you're doing an elaborate, you know, 3-hour Joe Rogan show every day, sure, like maybe you'll build up an audience that loves that, but are you going to be able to maintain that? I mean, Joe Rogan can't, because that's,
yeah. You better have 3 hours every day and you better be consistent. Yeah,
exactly. And some successful podcasters, they're successful, but I think they would be even, they would have even larger audiences if they didn't have lapses where they get inconsistent. Cause I see that even with like some pretty big podcasters now where, you know, they'll go, you know, they'll,
no, he's pointing at himself.
Lost my audio there.
You lost your audio? Oh, he was pointing at himself.
Take it over. Give me a second here.
No, go ahead.
Yeah, I think I know what he's talking about. Because, like, I previously, whenever I had Hip Hop Hour from 2017 till about 2021, you know, I was doing it. I first off started doing it one day a week. And then I went to 2 days a week. And it was okay. I was able to do it for the most part. Sometimes I would miss here and there. But I would make sure that I had that. Hey, I'm doing it. And what helped me do it is also, too, is that whenever I had it, Hip Hop Hour, for those of y'all who don't know, it was a radio show style podcast that I used to have. And what helped me stay on track is that every Sunday I went live on two different internet radio stations. And so, like, I had two people counting on me on top of, you know, I recorded it and put it out on the podcast platforms as well afterwards. So, you know, I had all of that that had to get taken care of. And so that kind of kept me 100% on point with it. And then I took a break because I had a lot of personal stuff going on or whatever and try to reevaluate. And then whenever I came back, I was doing five a week because I was in a mental state. And so I was doing five a week. And when I first told Jason Stapleton about it, he goes, I think you might, you're probably going to burn yourself out, but prove me wrong, you know? And yeah, I ended up shutting it down like 2 months later. I just shut it down completely. And yeah, it was for a lot of different reasons. It wasn't because I burnt myself out. You know, I've been doing it for like 4 years. And so I just kind of hit a point with that. And that's why I tried to like reevaluate. And that's why I really dove into marketing a lot and stuff and learned a lot more about that because I didn't get the podcast where I wanted to go. But are you back now, John? Can you hear everything?
Yeah. I'm back now.
Okay.
Yeah, similar to that, one thing I've changed recently with Finding Freedom is – I started live streaming, much like, and I was kind of motivated by you guys. Like, why am I not live streaming my show? So now I live stream every Thursday my interview, and then I release the audio on Monday. And I have seen some positive effects from it already, especially on Twitter. But what it's done is it's just eliminated the need to post the video, right? Like, if you can take away that resistance, because I'm already live streaming it, why would I repost the video? So finding those little areas where you can kind of make things easier on yourself is really important too. Because I mean, we're all going to get to a point no matter what. I mean, no matter how great things are, you know, you guys with this show, if you're all getting along great, there's going to be times that you're not going to want to do the show and you're just going to go through it. And there's going to be days that you feel better than other days. But, as long as you have a system to rely on and, you know, you're accountable to each other, then it's, I mean, that's what makes it happen. I mean, you can get through and there will be like during, like with Brian, Mark and I, there were probably 30 times where one of us would have to talk the other two out of like quitting. But it was just like, it would always work out where like one was up high when the others were down low. And like, it just kind of, it just kind of balanced out. But
what were some of the reasons that you guys thought about quitting? Like, you know, maybe you, for instance, what were some of the reasons you thought about quitting and the other guys talked you out of it?
Yeah, I mean, you know, off the top of my head, you know, for a long time, we were not making any money and it was our own fault. We were just bad at monetizing. So like we did not capitalize on having a Patreon group for way too long. Like we just, I don't know what we were thinking. Like we could have been monetizing a lot earlier. And when you are seeing a return in audience and you're seeing a return in impact and you're getting emails saying that, you know, we appreciate what you're doing, that all helps. But it's tough to continue with something when it's not only are you not making money, when you're losing money every month, it gets hard to continue on. So that would be one big reason for me, but we got past that hurdle. But just different things, just the grind of it over time. I mean, you know, maybe you have, I mean, you know how podcasting goes, like typically in the summer, downloads go down. In the fall, they come back up and they remain pretty high, generally, like through the holidays. But yeah, the summer things can get rough, and like you can get used to seeing your shows getting a certain amount of downloads, and when you look at those numbers and there's a dip, that it's like, what the heck is going on here? So it can get frustrating.
We have a constant drip. We have a constant dip. So
if you have a constant drip, Bruce, there's medication for that.
Yeah,
we like to maintain a solid low.
Yeah, exactly. We just keep those numbers high.
That is the bar low. There we go. John, do you have enough time? We'd love to have you stay over and do some bonus content with us, because there's some other subjects that we want to do, and but we want to give you a chance to go ahead and plug your podcast and your website and all that other stuff before we switch over to the other side. And actually, we want to thank you for being here, man. We lift our glasses up to you for whatever we're promoting today. We lift them up because you've decided to come here and support our podcast. And we love you for it, man. Go ahead and plug whatever you want to plug for right now.
Yeah, thanks for having me on. This has been fun. So I'll promote, of course, Lions of Liberty. You can find the website is lionsofliberty.com. You can find my podcast, Finding Freedom. I'm on any podcasting platform there, either just my feed, which is Finding Freedom with John Odermatt. That's on YouTube, which Bruce is showing now, or our Lions of Liberty Network feed, where you get my show and Brian's show as well. And we do have a show on Friday that we do almost every week, which is called Memoirs, which is more of just like a little bit of comedy and, we don't take ourselves too seriously on that show, just to take you into your weekend, breaking down breaking down serious topics, but getting some laughs about it as well.
Yeah, well, like I said, it's been great to have you on. You're one of my more constant guests, man, and I really appreciate you coming on. But we're going to take it over to the other side. I want to thank everybody here, all my co-hosts, Ken, Jason, Harkos, myself, Bruce. I'm going to thank myself, but you guys do all those things that you need to do and hit that share button, hit that like button, and make sure that you turn into our X discussion every morning, 6 a.m. to 7 a.m. on my commute.
Left-hand time.
Uncensored.
That is perfect standard time. That way you can get the real flavor of the kind of comical podcast that we do on during the
standard time.
Exactly. But I want to thank you all for being here, and you guys are great. John, thank you. We're going to see you on the other side, and I cannot wait to do another one of these podcasts, because it's one of the things that I love to do every Sunday. And we will see you guys later. Have a great day, and be good to yourselves.
Oh, I will.
He will. Don't be